Welcome to Series 2 of my podcast Stories of Unconscious Bias. I'm Smitha Tharoor. In Series 1, I had the great privilege of hearing stories of unconscious bias from some wonderful people about a wide range of topics. I laughed, cried, and was moved in equal measure. I started this series because I wanted the listeners to realize that we are not alone. All of us have similar stories. They may not be the exact same, but when we hear them, we can hear the parallels in our lives. My speakers have all shared their learning and how they manage their unconscious biases, which is also a wonderful life lesson for us. Series 2 will follow the same style of interview. I hope you enjoy listening. Welcome, listeners. I'd like to introduce Aditya Atri. Aditya has over 30 years' experience as an advertising and marketing executive. He has managed large consumer-facing programs and campaigns for both local and multinational brands across South Asia, Middle East, and Australia. He has held leadership positions across financial services, retail, and marketing communication companies. Aditya has lots of stories to share with us, so I'm looking forward to speaking with him. Thank you, Aditya, and welcome to Stories of Unconscious Bias.
Many thanks for having me over.
So, unconscious bias, simple two words, Aditya. What do you understand by them?
Deeply held beliefs and opinions, so deeply embedded in your psyche and your mind that certain decisions and actions become automatic, like muscle memory. And opinions and views on people and groups and countries and groups and religions and all kinds of subjects you have an opinion about even before you know the entirety of the facts about that subject.
That's interesting, and I love the choice of words that you use, muscle memory. You know, and I was in my head when you were saying that I was clicking my finger, it's like a click of a finger or the fact that you just jump to a conclusion without even realizing that you have, without knowing all the full facts. That's what you're saying. And so, you've had a lot of different experiences. Could you kind of expand on this? What do you mean by that? How did it show? How did it manifest with you?
Well, there are interesting ways it has manifested across many parts of the world and meeting with various people and working across industries. Interesting facts like when you move across geographies and in India, we drive on the right hand side of the road. And when you move to a country which drives on the left hand side of the road and you take an escalator in that country, your automatic muscle memory directs you to the left side, while the going up escalator is on the right. So, that's one example of how your muscle memory works in the mind in terms of beliefs, opinions, or facts, what you've experienced in the past. In another way, it is about the way you deal or have dealt with situations in previous experiences. And you transpose those experiences and try and use the same solutions, the same tools to deal with a situation or a group of people in a completely different context, just because the problem seems to be similar in its definition. You don't do enough work to understand the layers of the problems and you jump too straight into the solutioning. And that's how the bias drives you rather than the facts driving you.
Can you expand a little bit on that? Because that's, and I love your escalator example, by the way. It's just, it's fantastic how we, and we all do it. For those of us who I live in London and like in India, we drive on the same side of the road. And of course, if I go to the United States or even to France or Europe, it's not. But I want a little bit of an more detail on the second part of what you said, Aditya. This business about going into an organization and you're looking at it in a particular way. Can you give us some more detail to help us understand better?
Yes, there are many examples. So in the area of marketing, you bring in certain solutions which have worked from other parts of the world into your own geography. or into your own situation and expect to perform because it has performed elsewhere. And that often is does not happen. So, for example, the Indian experience has been in the 1990s and leading up to the early 2000s was many brands were launched in India. And they were launched on the premise that they will be successful because they were successful elsewhere in the world. The marketers or the manufacturers did not try and fully understand the needs of the Indian audiences and the barriers to consumption, and more importantly, the fact that the population or the consumer here was set in its ways in dealing with that subject or in dealing with that product. And therefore, there was a graveyard of brands which came in and died because they did not fully comprehend what happened. And there are some famous examples of this. India is the first country where McDonald's actually modified a burger to suit the Indian palate. And that's what that was done for the first time in India. Nowhere else in the world had McDonald's changed its menu. So the McAloo Tikki burger was created in India.
Right. No, that's a fantastic example. Not just the Aloo Tikki burger, but the whole point of organizations not understanding cultural unconscious biases towards products or towards certain things and making assumptions that if it works in London, then it has to work in Bombay, which is not necessarily the case at all. Great story. Can you give us some more stories around your experiences, Aditya?
Yes, I can. We worked on Gillette for many years. And when Gillette came into India in the early 90s, they calculated their the spends and the opportunity sizing for the Indian market. And we all talked about the big Indian middle class. And the first couple of years, the sales were 10%, and in fact, lower than what they had anticipated. And then they figured out the calculation was awry in the estimation of the market, because their estimation was based on behavior as they had seen in Europe and North America, where men used to shave X times, a number of times a week, or 3, 4, 5 times a week. Most people there were in either white collar jobs or blue collar jobs, which required people to come into their factories or offices well presented, that being shaved. In India, the shaving regimen was very different. People shaved once a week. A lot of men did not shave themselves. They went to barbers. So the whole business had to be recalibrated to suit the Indian mindset, the Indian behavior, rather than trying to change the behavior. And the brand took off. It took 2-3 years to fix that, but it did take off finally.
So what you're saying really is when we're talking about unconscious biases from a point of view of marketing and looking at product placement and marketing, it is very crucial that we have to first challenge our own unconscious biases of the expectation that we would have before we can even think. We have to look at the behaviors of people and about the country before we can even think of going any further. That's really what you've gained from that. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Right. Other than marketing, I mean, which is obviously very important and part of your career for many, many years, but just going along, you know, alongside many other experiences that you might have, what other stories can you share that is not necessarily related to work?
There are many areas. The obvious points of discussion and often flare up in arguments are the two particular favorites which work across very well across most parts of the world, which is politics and religion. And over the last few decades, one has been involved in discussion on both subjects. And the bias starts working the minute you get into a discussion, because you either see the other person have taken a position or you have taken a position. So the discussion starts on pretty hard positions from either side, and it does not lead to any fruitful discussion. Ultimately, because we are civilized, we agree to disagree, but especially on subjects like religion. But the reality is that the discussion leads to nowhere, and is designed for failure because of the biases which we come with into the discussion, rather than the fact that you should look at the discussion based on facts and listen and hear what other people have to say, rather than bring your own biases into play.
I'm smiling as you're sharing this story, Aditya, because I'm just visualizing you're sitting with a good friend and having a conversation that eventually always ends up becoming emotional. So I'm also hearing, even though you didn't use that word, the reason why you have to end up agreeing to disagree is because we are so entrenched in our own beliefs and become so emotionally sort of strict and determined that this is what it's going to be like, that we don't have the capacity to actually listen any differently. And that's about cognitive bias and the fact that I will say what I think you should hear. But obviously, you are not hearing that. You're hearing whatever you want to hear. And you come back from your own agenda. And of course, never the twain shall meet. So has there been any particular story you'd like to share around either politics or religion that kind of reinforced your unconscious biases?
Well, there have been many stories on religion, and they are not about religion A versus religion B, but on the concept of religion and spirituality and the belief in God and subjects like that. And there is an interesting story which happened with many years ago in Bombay, where the argument carried on for a couple of hours, maybe more, and it landed up in the wee hours of the night with the two of us standing in the middle of the road arguing about religion, whether God exists, does not exist, whether it is right to be spiritual or is it wrong to be spiritual. And we didn't really bother with the traffic. We became a little island and the traffic was going around us.
At 3 a.m. or something, I'm making up the time as you're saying.
Well,
you
it was well past midnight.
And so what did you learn from that, standing in the middle of the road and discussing, or would I say arguing, about something that in terms of religion? I mean, where has that taken you now that you're reflecting, perhaps? You said this was many years ago. What's different now?
It is different in my belief systems. I believe I've mellowed a bit more, a lot more, to the extent that I am not judgmental about an opposing point of view. I have started accepting an opinion which is radically different from mine, and learned how to coexist. It's very well articulated in a lovely little book which I read some time ago by Julian Barnes, Nothing to Be Frightened Of. And the first line in the book actually describes the shift in my behavior. And what Julian Barnes says in the first line is, I don't believe in God, but I miss him. And that is my belief now. My earlier belief was, I don't believe in God. But now it is, I miss him, because if I did believe in God, then I would be able to understand and accept the behavior of others a lot better than I did.
That's very powerful. And it's very, very succinctly stated, the way you've quoted from a book that you've read by Julian Barnes. So there are other things happening in your life, Aditya, that I'm aware of, and I'm wondering whether you might want to share that's making you perhaps more reflective.
Yes, there is something which happened just about a year back, and which is a tectonic shift. It was a big shock when it happened. I was diagnosed with colon cancer in September 2019. A bolt out of the blue, as they say. I didn't bother to go through the staging. I didn't go through stage 1, 2, and 3. I jumped straight to stage 4, jumping all the 3 other stages, and decided that I want to be at the peak of the cancer list. And there I was. And that was a big shock. The shock lasted for about 24, 48 hours. And I started behaving in a more rational way after that, and decided to deal with it in a more productive, planned manner. And that is the big event which has possibly made me a little more reflective than what I was, let's say, 5 years ago or in 2018.
Well, in fact, even the fact that you're talking about, I don't believe in God, but I miss him, is in itself, has that made any impact, knowing that you have 4-stage cancer? Has that impacted on your religious beliefs or how you view the world in any other way?
No, I don't believe it has. I don't believe that it has made me more religious or has forced me to seek some other form of spirituality or meditation or guidance, whatever you might like to call it. It has not changed from a religious, spiritual sense. It has made me more reflective to the extent that I have decided to live in the moment rather than dwell in the past as to why it happened, or look into the future to see how it'll end. So I can't do anything about the past, and nobody has a clue what's going to happen in the future and when it's going to happen. So live for the day, live for the moment, live in the moment, and you'd be fine. That's what's possibly happened in the past 1 year.
And actually, that's very powerful, purely because so many of us around the world, just purely because of COVID and nothing as tectonic in our lives as cancer and 4th stage at that, would have the opportunity to stop and reflect and acknowledge that we aren't in control of our lives the way we want to be. You know, all of us, many of us in January the 1st, 2020, would have started the year planning all kinds of things for the year. Whereas you had already arrived before January 1st, 2020, in the acknowledgement that you're going to live for the moment rather than planning ahead. So there is no comparison between us living in COVID and you having 4-stage cancer, but I see the similarities where there are so many of us who make plans and have expectations, and then we recognize for one reason or another that we no longer can. But in terms of unconscious bias, Aditya, and knowing what you now know, what has that done in terms of how you manage unconscious biases? What stories can you share around this?
There are stories. I have become more observant as to how people behave around me. The filters they use for me, the way they see me, that's one part. There are changes within me, obviously, which some I can see, some I don't see. But what I see better is what others see of me and how they perceive me. And there are many such stories. They are from how a cancer patient should be perceived. So in August or early September of 2019, there was Aditya Atri, and he was defined by what he did for a living, what his experience was, what was his family, what were his origins, what was his status in society, what is his address, what car he drove, etc. Post late September 2019, it is about Aditya Atri is cancer, and he should be looked at differently. He's a patient, or there are terms like survivor or thriver. All kinds of adjectives and terms would be used for you. And you're supposed and expected to behave in a certain manner. And that is defined by the biases people have about which have been built over a period of time as to what a cancer patient should look like. How should a cancer patient behave? So the little aspects which come alive, people would ask me when I used to go for my chemotherapy, which was a 6-7 hour jaunt to the hospital and back, oh, you drive to the hospital yourself and come, you know, and drive back. And I looked at them and said, yes, what's wrong in driving to the hospital and driving yourself back? No, but are you okay? Can you drive? And I said, yeah, I'm okay. I can drive. The way the chemotherapy patients who were getting the treatment along with me would be in that area, in that room. There is a certain behavior of the nurses which they started changing when they started interacting with me, because I was somewhat not in their framework of a normal cancer patient. I would joke with them, I'd laugh along with them, we'd talk about anything but not about cancer and not about the drugs and not about the treatment. And that is somehow changed them when they approached me. But the minute they left my bed and went to the next bed, they'd have this very somber look on their face. And this was even prior to the treatment beginning, when they inserted the chemo port, which was done under local anesthesia. And I'm there lying on the surgery table, and the surgeon and his assistants are talking to each other. And I decided I wanted to contribute to that subject. And they heard me out for about 30 seconds or maybe a minute, and then finally told me to shut up, because they expected the patient to lie without having a voice. And, you know, I'm not going to keep quiet, even though I am being cut open.
Good for you, Aditya. Because, I mean, that phrase you just used earlier, they expected me to be a normal cancer patient. I mean, what is a normal cancer patient? That's the question, you see. I mean, that's the beauty of what you're just sharing with us. Because so many people around the world right today who might be listening in might have either had cancer or have cancer right now. And each one of them will have different stories and will react differently. There's no normal, is there, in terms of how one should behave or not. And that's something that doctors and nurses must surely acknowledge. But good for you. Because this is for us, for the listeners, extremely powerful, because I'm sure there are listeners all over the world who might have either family or themselves or, you know, have experience of cancer at some level. And I think it's important just for us to hear from you what kind of learning that you are taking away from this experience.
My belief is, and I'm very careful in using the word belief, because it did not exist before September 2019. So it's something which has developed over the last past 1 year, is that this is ultimately a disease like any other disease or any other challenge presented in front of you, something that you have to deal with in your mind. And the way to look at it is not to become fatalistic or to deny facts, on the other hand, but to look at it with the realism that it is a disease, it is a dangerous disease. I'm not trying to reduce the seriousness of the subject in the way I deal with it, but ultimately it's about you as an individual, which is how you need to deal with it, because that defines how people around you deal with it, whether they're your caregivers or your doctors or your family. And therefore, it is about your not coming to terms with your situation, but believing in the fact that there is a way to deal with it in your head, not in terms of success or failure, but in terms of just living in the moment, living through the day and saying that, you know, I've lasted today and let's see how tomorrow will go, and take one day at a time. So it's about how you deal with yourself, and you need to be selfish about it. You cannot become, you cannot lament. You cannot say, oh, I wish I'd done things differently. Oh, I wish there's some other drug which will work on me. Well, it may or may not. You cannot judge that. It's a punter's game. The gamblers in Las Vegas have a better chance of predicting results than we do. And therefore, it is in your head you need to come and deal with it, that things will happen. Some days you'll have good days. Some days you'll not have such good days. And therefore, you know, you hope for the best, but be prepared for the worst.
Very wise indeed. I'm kind of moved. I'm not quite sure how to respond to your comments. But if I may just ask you one more question. In terms of your own unconscious biases and the awareness that you have cancer, has that impacted any way in terms of relationships? I mean, you are a father and you are a husband, and you, I don't know whether you have parents, you might well be a child to parents. Does that impact in any way on how you, your relationship with all of them, or does that continue in what you've just said earlier?
No, I think it has changed somewhat. I won't say it's changed dramatically, but I believe that I have become a little more open to listening to what others have to say. I'm not as quick to interject and argue a point. I am willing to accommodate another opinion which is vastly different from mine. But that again comes with a caveat. It does not change the basic personality or persona of Aditya Atri. It is just a small nuance change. So it's not a black and white shift. It's not a radical shift in my behavior. So it's something which I have believed that I have changed. It may be so minor that others may not have noticed.
Yeah, and your earlier comment as well, that so many people are defined by their difference. Yours is at the moment cancer, but there could be so many other areas of difference. And so often around the world, we look at somebody and we define them by their difference. Oh, he's black, or he's gay, or he's Muslim, or for some reason, by talking about you as someone who is one thing rather than a person who is so many nuanced and so many aspects of that personality, is something that we often forget when we are describing somebody. So Aditya, I mean, you know, you've had time to reflect and you've kind of had so many different experiences, work-based, and of course, this a tectonic shift in your life because of your diagnosis last year. You've already suggested how you manage it, but just to kind of tie it all up together, can you tell us, how do you manage your own unconscious biases? What kind of sort of advice do you give yourself that we can also learn from?
Challenge everything. Don't take anything because at face value. Become using the old American neoconservative phrase, trust but verify. Immerse yourself in a radical contrary opinion to yours. Whether it's in politics or religion, not to learn about that subject, which is different to yours, which holds a different opinion to yours, but just to get yourself sensitized to what's happening around yourself. But most importantly is to learn how to live with the challenges in your own body and mind, especially in your mind. And trust yourself that what you will do, the gene in you wants to preserve itself in some form, will be selfish and will take the best decision for you. And that best decision is not in being weighed down by this disease, is to rise up and live normally and as normally as you can with this disease as possible.
I'm not even going to summarize that. There's some wonderful, wise words that you have shared with all of us. And I feel honored and I'm really appreciative that you have made the time to have this conversation and share your stories of unconscious bias. Aditya Atri, thank you so very much.
Thank you, Smita. Thank you for having me over.
Thank you for listening to my podcast, Stories of Unconscious Bias. If you enjoyed hearing this episode, do tune in every Saturday for a new interview. And if you could share, leave a review and rating, that would be hugely appreciated. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter @SmithaTharoor, and feel free to suggest new guests. Until next week.